The numbers are staggering. A report out today from Oxfam says that by next year, the world's wealthiest 1% will own half of all the wealth. That means the gap between rich and poor is wider than it's ever been and growing quickly. For more context and a sense of how Canadians fit in, we have reached Ian Lee. He's an assistant professor in the Sprott School of Business at Carleton University, and we've reached him in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rebecca.
Are you surprised by these numbers?
No, because I've studied them before and I've seen them in different contexts, but they're similar. They have a similar theme to them. A very small number of people, typically 1%, have a large share of the wealth, and this gets a lot of people's knickers in a knot, although I don't get my knickers in a knot.
Why not?
Well, let me put it to you. Well, here's what they're saying. Okay, 1% of the top 1% of the world own a large number of the shares of publicly traded companies, and these shares go up in value as the company sells more widgets. So Apple sells more iPhones. And because lots of people want to buy Apple iPhones, the revenues of Apple goes up, the share price goes up in value, and then the inequality between those that own shares of Apple and the rest, most of the rest of us that don't, gets bigger. And so they're saying this is bad. Reverse that, when you go into a recession, the share price goes down because the revenues of the company goes down. And so, you know, the share price goes down and the inequality shrinks. Now, surely they're not advocating that we should be trying to create recessions and create bad companies so the share price goes down in value and thereby reduces the inequality. But I've got one more quick, even better argument, I think. Sidney Crosby makes $15 million a year playing in the NHL because he's a superb hockey player. Does that make Ian Lee poor because Sidney Crosby is a really good hockey player and gets paid a lot of money? What Sidney Crosby is paid has nothing to do with me. It doesn't make me poor because he's rich.
But I mean, even if they, that's one way of looking at it, but if we are able to categorically look at all the poor people and say, this is the numbers we have here, and these are the rich people who own this percentage of everything, is that still not problematic?
It's not problematic for me because that's not what caused poor people to be poor. I mean, the implication is, and this is what Oxfam's saying, those rich people are rich because somehow they stole people or stole money or somehow seized assets or something from poor people. And I'm saying that is spurious, bogus, nonsensical correlation. It's like saying, and we use this joke in statistics when we talk about stats, in the last 40 years, number of people with cancer has gone up very dramatically. In the last 40 years, the number of planes flying over top in the sky over Canada has gone up very dramatically. Therefore, planes flying over top of the sky cause cancer. Well, they don't. What they're saying is the rich people are causing the poor people to be poor. They don't.
Do you have a problem, though, with a widening income gap, or that's not a problem for you?
No, it's not. What is the issue, before people think I'm really being insensitive, is we should be focusing on low-income people and the poor, those below the poverty line, which is an income measure developed by Statistics Canada, which measures the amount of income you need to pay for food and groceries and transportation. They calculate it all the time. They're very good at it. And so it's called the LECO, if you want the technical term, the low-income cutoff. And so we've developed measures in Canada to target and focus on people below the poverty line. We, for a long, long time in our country, poverty was overwhelmingly an elderly problem. Most elders were poor. And then in the mid-late 60s, we adopted the Canada Pension Plan, Old Age Pension, and Guaranteed Income Supplement. And within 10 years, we almost eliminated elder poverty in this country. It's now the third lowest in the world. In the world, my goodness. And so what I'm trying to say is, instead of getting our knickers in a knot over the fact that George Clooney makes $20 million a movie, or that Neil Young has a net worth of $73 million because he makes music, is irrelevant. We should be focusing on the people at the bottom and saying, what can we do to help change their lives and raise their standard of living and their income? That's what we should be doing.
If we were to look at this Oxfam report more closely and we look sort of regionally on where we find both the largest swaths of wealth and also people who are living below the poverty line, where do we find them?
It should be no surprise to any Canadian. Toronto. I'm not from Toronto, by the way. I'm from Ottawa. And the GTA is the largest concentration of wealth in Canada. Not surprising, because first off, there's about 8 million or so people in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area. And secondly, the preponderance of the majority of head offices are in Toronto. And of course, people in head office are paid more than people, you know, out in the field at lower levels. And so that's the largest area of wealth concentration. And then the second area is Calgary, Alberta, but specifically Calgary, because although oil prices have gone down for the last 4 months, for the last 40, 50, 60 years, they were going up very steadily over time. And so that's the second area of concentration of wealth. And in terms of, if you'd say geographically, where are the least affluent people in Canada, I don't think there's any doubt in the stats show it's the Maritimes. Are less wealthy. That's why they get equalization transferred there, because they have a lower standard of living.
And what about this whole concern that it's the wealthy, the 1%, who are controlling sort of the markets in the world, and that alone is problematic?
Well, I don't buy that argument, and I'll explain why. I mean, as I've already said, most of the people in that top 1%, their wealth is paper wealth. And I mean by not to trivialize it, not to say it's not real, but they own shares in corporations. Bill Gates is worth $50 billion. Why? Because he started Microsoft from scratch and grew the company into the huge company it is today. Steve Jobs, well, he's you know, his widow and family are now literally multi billionaires. I think they're almost as worth as much as Gates, Bill Gates. Why? Because he started Apple and grew it. Most of those people in that uber wealth, they didn't go and rob a bank. Most of them, and this is what the Oxfam report does not say, most of them started companies and grew the companies to a very large size, and they own the shares in those companies after they went public. And so they're really, although they would never say this because they would realize it would be unpopular to say this, they're really going after entrepreneurs that became very, very successful. Overwhelmingly, the people in that 1%, not all of them, but a large, large number of them, were entrepreneurs that became incredibly successful, like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or people like that.
You know, I am curious to hear what our listeners have to say about your opinion. I have a feeling it's an unpopular one here today, but we'll find out.
That's okay. I'm a tenured professor, and I'm a poor professor with no shares and no wealth except for my house.
Okay.
So you can call me in the debates that poor professor from Ottawa.
All right. Ian Lee, we'll leave it to our listeners now. Thank you very much for this.
Thanks a lot.